So hello and welcome to No One Is Illegal Radio. Today I'm joined on the phone by Harsha Walia and Alex Hunder. Harsha is an organizer with No One Is Illegal Vancouver. She's involved in the struggles for migrant justice, indigenous sovereignty, and anti-imperialist, anti-poverty, and feminist organizing. She has also been active in the resistance to the 2010 Olympics and the G20 summit. Alex Hunder is an activist and community organizer based in Kitchener-Waterloo and Toronto. He has been targeted as a, quote, ringleader for his role in Indigenous solidarity and anarchist networks, including AWOL, SOAR, and Six Nations Solidarity Network. He's presently one of the G20 defendants charged with conspiracy and was arrested in a violent preemptive raid, house raid. Thanks for joining us today, Harsha and Alex.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
So maybe we could just quickly start by providing a bit of a context about what we're going to talk about over the next few minutes. And Harsha, I'm wondering if you could talk about this. The G20 summit, most people listening to this show would know, happened in Toronto from June 25th to 27th this year. And during that time, we saw massive disruptions in the city. We saw most of the downtown core cordoned off. We saw a massive influx of police. We also saw more than 40,000 people take to the streets in Toronto from a wide variety of struggles. But who exactly were the G20 and why the resistance to it?
Well, the G20 are the 20 most powerful countries politically and economically in the world. And the G20 in particular has evolved from, as people know, the G5 and the G8. And the G20 includes an increasing number of countries from the global south. And, you know, the reasons for that are incredibly strategic. So as the crisis of capitalism, if you will, is starting to force the economy into downturns in Western countries, there's an increasing reliance on export and production in countries like China and India, which are, you know, the new kind of capitalist faces. So the G20 represents really a model of an increasing number of former colonies to be brought into this industrial mode of development. And it includes, so the meetings that happened in Toronto included the political and economic elite of these countries, as well as economic institutions like the World Bank and IMF, which, as people know, are responsible for some of the most repressive policies of structural adjustment and forced privatization. So, you know, it's really perpetuating an economic agenda of labor exploitation and theft of resources at a global scale.
Right. And we sort of saw people opposing that agenda of austerity that they're planning on imposing upon poor communities across the globe. But even here in Toronto, we saw movements for economic justice, environmental justice, and social justice take to the streets in Toronto. But during those 2 days, we also saw more than 1,200 people were arrested, targeted, beaten, and assaulted by police in what is now being called as the largest mass arrest in Canadian history. Some more than 19 of our known friends and community organizers by this point have been charged with conspiracy. And Alex, you mentioned the figure has now reached more than 110. Alex, but you're one of them. And I want to talk about what kind of happened to you on the day of your arrest. But before then, Alex, I want to talk to you about how you sort of got politicized, how you've been involved in struggles for land rights and for indigenous sovereignty up in Grassy Narrows, and you've helped found the Center for Social Justice in Kitchener-Waterloo. Can you tell us a bit about how you got started and the kinds of things that you've been doing?
Yeah, I got started several years ago as organizing very, very mainstream activities on university campuses, and ended up with an opportunity to go up to Grassy Narrows, Grassy Narrows First Nation, north of Kenora, in Treaty 3 territory, and to spend a summer up there supporting an ongoing logging blockade. And while I was up there, it became very, very starkly evident to me some of the connections between capitalism and colonialism and the way the capitalist economy continues to necessitate the ongoing destruction of indigenous communities in this country, and indigenous or any other land-based communities or nations or cultures in any place. And to see firsthand, kind of laid bare, the impact on communities and on people of these systems of subjugation, exploitation, and community destruction kind of left me with an imperative to continue engaging strongly at a level that can attempt to challenge that kind of exploitative, dominant system that is so destructive. And at the same time, one of the other things that I saw in that community and have seen in others is that there are, that there do exist living alternatives to that system that are much more deeply rooted in place and in connection to places and in organic ways of being in places and on the land, and that realizing that those alternatives are there and that there is a real active attempt by the state and by states and by, you know, that kind of agenda itself to destroy those alternatives is, you know, that is part of the G20 agenda, is to destroy alternatives to this system. And it was kind of that realization, that continued process of realization as I continued doing all sorts of kinds of work, that kind of led to the type of engagement that I do now.
Right. And you were, of course, one of the many, many, many people in Toronto who were organizing to oppose the G20 agenda. And June 26th was the day when you were arrested. Can you talk a bit about what happened to you on the day of your arrest and the kinds of charges that you're facing now?
Yeah, so I mean, the charges I'm facing now, as you said, I'm one of 19 people charged in a particular conspiracy case where there's a few counts of indictable criminal conspiracy against us, and I'm also facing four counts of counsel to commit various indictable offenses. And like you said, I think it's really important to remember that it's not just the 19 so-called ringleaders that are being charged with conspiracy. There are multiple conspiracies on the table that the Crown is prosecuting, and there are more than 130 people charged with various conspiracy charges. And one of those cases has more than 110 people charged in it, which begs the question, what can they possibly actually mean by a conspiracy if there's that many people being charged? But what happened to me was I was at home on the morning of the 26th, or I guess it was, you know, what felt like the night of the 25th. It was 4 a.m. on the 26th, and the police came through my door with a battering ram and guns drawn and dragged myself and my partner and a friend out of the house and off to jail we were. And I think it's really important to recognize that while that has been understood in the media as exceptional and shocking, that is in fact not really the case. It may be an escalation for community organizers to face that kind of targeting, but in fact that kind of police operation, that kind of excessively violent raid happens on a fairly regular basis in this city in targeted communities. And the fact that it was the gangs and guns unit that raided our house speaks to the way that that kind of police tactic and that kind of violence being employed by the police and that kind of targeting is one of their standard tactics of repression, be it of community organizers and anarchists, or be it of in communities of color, such as the Jane and Finch community, which is one of the places where the gangs and guns unit operates on a daily basis.
Right. And Harsha, I wanted to ask you, I know you've written about this specific thing too, about how exceptionalizing this sort of G20 violence normalizes the daily violence that police commit in our communities. But all of this targeting so far of community organizers specifically has been meant as a warning to all of those of us who work against the violence that the system imposes upon us. But do you think these sort of scared tactics of the state, are they working? Are they accomplishing what they wanted to accomplish?
Well, I mean, I think the ideal answer would be that no, it hasn't scared people off. But I think it would be irresponsible to suggest that, you know, people aren't affected by state repression.
Right.
And, you know, of course people are. But I think what's more important is, you know, how do we overcome that fear? And I think, you know, that's a process that people are continuing to undertake. And one of the examples, you know, I'm not based in Toronto, so I have mostly anecdotal evidence, but, you know, definitely the fact that as massive roundups were happening across Toronto on the 27th, that 3,000 people showed up for a jail solidarity rally, and the fact that most of them weren't even organizers, right? They're residents right. of Toronto who were deeply troubled and opposed to the fact that this massive police operation was happening on their streets. I think in terms of community organizations and community organizers, there's absolutely a sense of fear. And I think some of it is, you know, it's not necessarily paralyzing. I think some of it is important for us to take stock in terms of things like security culture and infiltration and things that facilitated some of the conspiracy cases happening. But overall, I think the fact that there's an increasingly strong network of allies, and that the network, which is what they're trying to break, has actually been strengthened, is something that I think is a testimony to the fact that people's resolve, which is, you know, the panel events that are happening this week, the fact that people's resolve has been strengthened, I think, is a testament to the fact that state repression has not quite met its goal.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to quickly ask you, because the next question, we know there's a court date coming up very soon on September 27th, where the people charged in this specific kind of conspiracy Alex was mentioning mm-hmm. are going to be showing up. But before then, I wanted to ask you, Harsha, were you facing charges for a bit too that were quickly dropped?
Yes, I was facing the conspiracy charges that the so-called 19 now ringleaders are facing, but my charges were dropped.
Okay. And can you tell us how many more people right now remain charged, not just with conspiracy, with other things related to the G20?
My understanding is there's now approximately 260 people
right.
still facing charges. And, you know, there are a variety of indictable and summary offenses, so everything from mischief to the more serious counts of conspiracy. But also, I want to highlight, sorry, I'm eating.
That's okay.
That during the process of the past court date that happened, the charges that were dropped, they were really, you know, people were bribed into accepting money to have their charges dropped. And I think one thing that speaks, again, to the earlier question of the power of the movement is the fact that so many people refused to accept these financial bribes and bribes of diversion to get rid of the charges, because there was a commitment by many of the arrestees to actually fight these charges in court, even though it meant, you know, it came at significant personal sacrifice for people in terms of travel to court dates and having to basically, you know, deal with the consequences of restricted bail conditions. I think that's an important message, that people really can't be bought off by being paid off, you know, $50 to $100 to get rid of their charges.
Yeah, absolutely. And Alex, so this court date, which is now coming up on September 27th, what is the expectation of this court date? What do you think is going to happen?
Well, my impression, and I am, has been, I'll be honest, I've been a little bit more focused on the ongoing appeal of my release. Myself and my partner have had our release, our bail release, appealed by the Crown, and they were trying to have us thrown right back in jail and have the entire release appealed, and that has been rejected, but we still have to go back to court on October 18th. And fight over the attempts of the Crown to tighten our already very strict bail conditions. But on the 27th, it is my understanding that the primary purpose of that hearing is to finally receive the actual evidence, the disclosure that the Crown is intending to use against us at trial. And to set a date for the preliminary hearing.
Okay. And Harsha and Alex, you are both going to be speaking at a panel event this Friday at Ryerson. It's going to go from 6:30 to 9 at Ryerson University at the Rogers Communication Center, room 204, which is the Eaton Lecture Theater. So I would urge more and all of our listeners to sort of come out on that day, and they can hear both of you speak about your specific experiences and what you think, how the movement can sort of resist this police repression and build a stronger movement. Any final words from either one of you?
Thank you.
Alex?
I just want to quickly add on to something Harsha was saying when she was talking about, you know, the resolve of the movement and the growing resolve and some of the fear. And I think that I just want to say that, you know, while it is imperative that people refuse to give up and people continue to stand up and to push back against the state and the repressive tactics and oppression, broadly speaking, that it is also important for us to be able to admit that there is fear and to be able to talk about that fear, because it is in sharing that kind of honesty about the impacts of state tactics on ourselves and on our communities and on various communities. It is in those spaces where some of the strongest solidarity between people and between various parts of the movement can be built. And I think it's through being able to talk about and share some of our fears with each other that can be a place that is a really strong source of courage to overcome those fears. And I think that, so I think it's really important for people to be really honest about the impacts of this while they refuse to stop fighting.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot for joining us on the phone today, Harsha and Alex.
Thank you.
Thank you.